And greetings. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and a podcast alongside Todd Erzin and Aaron McIntyre. I am Steve Dace. We are brought to you by our good friends at First Cup Coffee Company, the Christian-owned Patriot Coffee Company that stands for the same core values of faith, family, and freedom that you do. Freshly roasted. In fact, they put the roast date right there on every single bag, and it's shipped to you within days of being roasted with a flavor for every freedom-loving American. If you'd like to try it, get 10% off. Use my last name, Dace, as your promo code when you go to firstcup.com. Firstcup.com, promo code Dace. And if you end up subscribing, you also get an additional 10% off for the life of the subscription. You can't beat it. Just go to firstcup.com, promo code Dace. That's firstcup.com, promo code Dace. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about next generation Marxism next hour. We're also next hour for Idolatry or Not. The OG over at Rasmussen Polling, the actual Scott Rasmussen, he doesn't own it anymore. He sold it several years ago. And I've known Scott off and on for a long time. Just a good, solid dude. One of the most integrity-driven people I've ever met in the public polling sphere. And he did some polling over Easter weekend. And one or two results in particular that I found very fascinating, and we're going to discuss them coming up in Idolatry or Not next hour. Speaking of polling, one of you sent in your own look at the polls. My bad. submission. And yes, I did put that cash in the drawer. So thank you for sending that over. In the overtime today, we are 31 weeks from today, we think anyway, there will be a presidential election. At least it's on the schedule. We'll see if we get there or not. 31 weeks from today is a presidential election. So I thought that's let's take a look at, because I know there's going to be a lot of you. I know what it's like to break this addiction. It took me some time as well. Okay, and that's why Todd has a gun over there at the ready. All right, but I know a lot of you are still going to want to look at the polls. And if that's you, then we're going to do you a public service. Which of the look at the polls you should actually be looking at, and what their recent record of success or failure may happen to be. What, Don? What?
It's pretty much here just to shoot myself now. Because my goodness.
And we're going to look at people's records of success or lack thereof, and we're even going to be able to tell you which side their errors have been slanted towards more often than not. That's pretty good data, don't you think?
Yeah.
I know, because, I mean, a lot of people like to follow. I mean, Rush, during the 2000 election, the late, great Rush Limbaugh, kind of made the Real Clear Politics polling average a thing. Most people had never heard of it. We're still at the nascent stage of the online era. So the idea of compiling polls into an average to kind of get, you know, as the scriptures would say, a wisdom and a multitude of counsel, you know, mm-hmm. figure, you know, the ones that are really wrong and the ones that are really right, you know, kind of balance each other out. And this is maybe a nice median line of where things are. Well, in the this is from the Real Clear Politics polling average. These are the polls that Real Clear Politics includes in its polling average. Right. We're only going to look at those. OK. And here's the thing, too, as a little tease. The last two election cycles, so this goes back now almost 25 years, the last two election cycles have been both the least accurate and most accurate polling cycles ever in the RCP average. 2020, the least accurate ever in the RCP average. 2022 midterms, the most accurate in the history of the RCP average. So we'll dig into all of that data, kind of a viewer's guide, you know, which ones do you, I mean, we're assuming if you're a devotee of this show that you really do want to know what's real, not just what, you know, rubs your belly. And if you're not there yet, we're either going to break you or you're just going to turn us off, because that's just how we roll around here, you know? So if you want to know, all right, who's telling me what's real and what's not, whose track record should I be following and whom should I not, we'll get into all of that in the overtime today. For Blaze TV subscribers at blazetv.com/dace, you can go there and become a Blaze TV subscriber for a discount at blazetv.com/dace. We'll upload it. You can watch that after we record it later today at blazetv.com/dace. All right, with that though, let's rock and roll. It is time. Oh, Pop Culture Tuesday. I forgot to mention that. We're going to talk about a topic that may seem like it's not that important, but it very well could be symptomatic of the decline and fall of Western civilization, or it could very well be a very clever and, you know, ingenious way of avoiding something that disproportionately causes harm. And as long, I mean, we're not necessarily against that. That's not against the dude code, trying to go out of your way to cause the least amount of unintentional harm as possible.
Nope. Sure.
It can be if it's at the sake of protecting what's good, true, and beautiful, right? If you put that ahead of that, okay? But in the midst of protecting what's good, true, and beautiful, if there's a way to not do undue harm, right?
Right.
Then we're not against that, okay?
So we're
going to debate that coming up here, and maybe we won't. Maybe we'll all agree one way or the other. We'll get to that here at the bottom of the hour for Pop Culture Tuesday. So now, before we get to all of that, here is Aaron's rundown of what happened while we were away.
What happened while we were away, brought to you by a potential challenge in the state of Florida. Yesterday, the Florida Supreme Court handed down a pair of rulings. On one, the court decided to uphold the state's 15-week abortion ban, clearing the way for the 6-week heartbeat bill signed by Governor Ron DeSantis last April to go into effect in 30 days. On the second ruling, however, the state Supreme Court ruled that the state constitutional amendment that would hamstring government efforts to protect babies across Florida meets the necessary requirements to appear on ballots this November. So the topic of baby killing will indeed be on the ballot in Florida come November. The measure, which will appear on ballots this fall as Amendment 4, would allow baby killing before viability, but would still require parents to be notified if a minor tries to kill her baby. Moving on, independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. made all the right people very angry with his appearance on CNN last night, particularly this moment.
I can make the argument that President Biden is a much worse threat to democracy. And the reason for that is President Biden is the first candidate in history, the first president in history that has used the federal agencies to censor political speech, so to censor his opponent. I can say that because I just won a case in the Federal Court of Appeals and now before the Supreme Court. It shows that he started censoring not just me. 37 hours after he took the oath of office, he was censoring me. No president in the country has ever done that. The greatest threat to democracy is not somebody who questions election returns, but a president of the United States who used the power of his office to force the social media companies, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, to open a portal and give access to that portal to the FBI, to the CIA, to the IRS, to CISA, to NIH, to censor his political critics. President Biden, for the first president in history, to use the secret, his power over the Secret Service, to deny Secret Service protection to one of his political opponents.
At the White House yesterday during the Easter egg roll, Joe Biden was asked by reporters about the outrage his administration evoked over their declaration of Trans Day of Visibility on Easter. Biden reportedly responded by saying, quote, "I didn't do that." Not to worry, though. David French is here to say the real problem over the weekend wasn't the affirmation of meatball surgery and chemical castration for minors. Here he is on MSNBC, talking about the only person they talk about on MSNBC.
What we saw on Easter Sunday was a remarkable display of venom and hatred. I mean, really to the point, Mika, where you're right to wonder, is he okay? And we know the answer is no, he's not okay.
Going across the pond now, where atheist extraordinaire Sir Richard Dawkins has sowed the scorpion and is now reaping the stinger.
Well, I must say I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, And I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we, certainly if we substituted any alternative religion, that would be truly dreadful.
Well, which brings me to my supplementary point, which is that, as we know, church attendance is plummeting, but the building, the erection of mosques across Europe, I think 6,000 are under construction, and there are many more, I mean, are being planned. So do you think, do you regard that as a problem? Do you think that matters?
Yes, I do, really. I mean, I must choose my words carefully. I mean, if I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I'd choose Christianity every single time.
And finally, where are the men who act? Well, we found one. Here's WRTV-TV in Indianapolis.
I had heard it from outside. I'd walked in and he was visibly assaulting, you know, throwing stuff. I believe I saw him spit at her. And how I was raised, man, you don't do that stuff. And it was kind of go time from there.
Gabriel, seen here, says he tackled Daniel Saunders to the ground as he was trying to leave. He held him down until police arrived minutes later to make an arrest.
She didn't seem like she could defend herself in any such way. And I was afraid that he was either leaving to get something to arm her. She had said that he had threatened to kill her. I did combat sports for quite a while. So I was completely controlling. I didn't want to punch him or anything. I didn't want to hurt him too bad. So I just held him, man.
The manager is grateful that someone was there to keep his employees safe. Luckily, he was here at the right time in the right place. And I'm very thankful that my employees weren't damaged. And he's calling Gabriel a hero. Definitely a hero. Like, you don't have to be an ordinary person. You can be a hero anytime or anywhere, wherever you go. But Gabriel wouldn't use that word to describe himself.
All glory to God, man, for real.
Just a dude going to Subway and saw he needed to act, and so he did. And that's what happened while we were away.
I don't even know what to do with that. I mean, I just don't.
Didn't get his phone out.
Who was the bishop you and I were talking about his statement over Easter, Todd? Who's the bishop?
Oh, Vigano.
And then you and I were talking about it off the air, and we're like, because I was like, it was just, dude, that was apostolic. And then we were like, off the air, like,
it's just the job.
Actually,
man.
Maybe it's just a job of priest, and there's just so few of them doing that job that when one does it, it looks apostolic.
Yes.
When it's really just the job of being a priest.
Perfect. You're right. Same here.
Same here. I mean, this something like this would have happened on a regular basis in America for centuries, a couple centuries.
Yeah.
We're what, 248 years old?
Yeah.
So a couple of centuries or so, this would have been happened every day in America somewhere. Now we're like looking at each other like, what do we do with that? I don't even know what to do. Let's get to more about Aaron's montage after I tell you about another young man who's doing some things. Got an email today from a 12-year-old youngster named Isaac. And you'll appreciate this, Aaron, as someone who is quite proud of your 100% biblical worldview from our friends over at Nehemiah Institute. They sent you a certificate today, in fact.
Indeed, they did. Do you want to see it?
It's already all over Twitter.
Certified 100% based.
Yes. You and Isaac, I think, have much in common. He's only 12. So he needs to grow up a little bit before you guys hang. Okay.
Okay.
But he sent me a PDF today. You know what it is? It is all of the completion certificates from Hillsdale College he has received.
Nice.
For the amount of online courses he has done there. And I'm just, at this point, Isaac, brother, my favorite all-time episode of The Simpsons is when Homer sued the all-you-can-eat fish fry because it wasn't really all-you-can-eat. They kicked him out because he ate so much. And when Lisa, the daughter, walks up to Phil Hartman playing the late great Phil Hartman playing the voice of the attorney, the shyster attorney, basically. And she walks up to him as he's about to go to court. Good luck with your trumped up lawsuit, Dad. Love that line. My all time favorite lines. All right. But nevertheless, they may have to throw you out. Isaac may be the first young man ever thrown out of Hillsdale's free online courses. He's taken them all, man. So make a note. Bookmark this episode. In about 25 years, everyone within the sound of my voice, all of us included, we're going to need jobs from Isaac. We're all going to be working for Isaac. That was back in the day when Northwestern Athletics sucked at everything. Their student section used to chant that at the end of games. Hey, it's okay. You blew us out today, but you're going to work for us today. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're all going to work for Isaac one day. He is taking the Hillsdale free college courses. Make sure, Isaac, you take the one from Victor Davis Hanson on American citizenship and its decline, taught by the noted historian. It traces the history of citizenship and explains how it's undermined in America today by things like open borders, identity politics, and more. Americans taking the course, which you know Isaac probably already has, will gain a deeper insight into the connection between citizenship and freedom. And that connection is exactly why they're trying to undermine it. So sign up today for Hillsdale's free online course. I'll bet you Isaac already beat you to it, though. All right. American Citizenship and Its Decline by visiting Dace for Hillsdale, F-O-R, daceforhillsdale.com. That's daceforhillsdale.com. Again, that's daceforhillsdale.com. And congratulations to Isaac. Get on his good side now. You're going to be sending him a resume at some point in the future. All right. Let's get to Aaron's montage. Is it entirely possible that Joe Biden did not issue that proclamation?
Yes.
Yes.
See, because I agree with you. I think it's entirely possible that it's not. I think it is entirely possible he heard about this yesterday for the first time. Maybe even when he was asked about it. And I don't. That's not an excuse. That's a statement about his mental state. He's clearly not running the country. I mean, we all know this. You guys listen to more right-wing media than we do, okay? So you guys all know about calling a lid every day at noon, and you guys have heard all these topics and content, you know, pieces long before we bring them up, so you guys already know about this. You can't run the country on a schedule like that. You just simply can't. He's not calling these shots. When was the last time you think Joe Biden tweeted something himself?
Never.
From his official account, from POTUS account? Think he ever has? Because I would say never. Probably never has.
Yeah, probably never.
Can I ask a question?
And that's where this originally came, right? Was from his Twitter account? Yeah.
Can I ask a question in that vein? Take away the dementia. Do you believe everything that you know about Joseph Robinette Biden? That's his middle name, right? Right? Robinette?
Yeah.
Everything you know about him up until he became president, ran for president, take away the dementia. I don't know what the answer to this question is. I think I do, but I'm not totally sure. Do you think he would have signed off on a declaration of Transgender Day of Visibility on Easter if he did not have dementia?
Oh, yeah.
See, I'm leaning that way, too, because he has a history of just complete cravenness.
Yes.
But I'm not totally sure about that.
This is why that...
I think it would have happened. Yes, I agree. Okay.
Oh, these.
I mean,
are...
we're talking about a guy whose first presidential run in 1988 was undermined because he was openly just copying other people's speeches and writings and calling them his own. Okay.
This is also
so
the same guy.
Your craven desire is right on the money.
This is also the same guy that railed against light on crime policies, you know, in the inner city for a number of years as well. So that's kind of why I asked the question.
Now here's what I think would not have happened if he was of sound mind and body, is I don't think that and the removal of any religious renderings or mentionings within the White House Easter egg hunt, I don't think both of those things would have occurred. I think he would have attempted to syncretize the two things. They can go together. We're all one big, happy, diverse community. I don't think necessarily the other thing would have happened. But would there have been a trans day of if he thought he needed to do that? Yeah, I do. But I think it would have been more clever. I don't think it would have been as brazen. I don't think it would have been as ham-fisted. And I think it would have been done, well, I mean, kind of similar to what you saw Trump do, where Trump put out a phenomenal statement about the true meaning of Easter, and then, you know, took a column written, which I read the column, and we talked about it in the overtime yesterday. I didn't think the column was bad at all, and I know the author personally. But he took it and blew it up as, you know, I'm being persecuted like Jesus. I think Biden would have tried to have both of these sides of the coin and presented that they could coexist. And we'd be talking about that instead of just the full on brunt.
You would have done it.
Yeah,
you would have done a David Cameron. I remember about a decade ago when David Cameron was still prime minister of the United Kingdom. I remember he put out, it would have been 2013, 2014, just a beautiful Easter message, just a great apologetic of what the holy day is all about. And now here we are 10 years later. I saw that Cameron says that over Easter weekend that his proudest accomplishment as prime minister is legalizing so-called same-sex marriage. He would have done something like that.
Correct.
A beautiful Easter Day message along with, hey, it's also Trans Day of Visibility.
I think they both would have tried them both. All right, two more things I want to mention here. Let's stick on well, I guess now I think about it, they're both spiritual topics, but the more, I think, even segue is to go to Richard Dawkins. What do you even make of that? I mean, your description, Aaron, of sows the scorpion, reaps the stinger. I mean, dude, these are your people. How did you think this was going to go? I mean, this idea that you can destabilize one worldview and something else is not going to occupy its space, that we're just going to remain sort of chemical evolutionary accidents that will just pursue each happiness without imposing on one another in some nexus of utopia that, you know, Gene Roddenberry invented, you know, in 1966, okay, is not human nature. How did he think this was going to go?
Guys, this is absolutely perfect. That the day that this went viral, what day did this go viral? It was yesterday on April Fool's Day. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. This is just a prime example of kind of an offshoot of what Todd calls invincible ignorance, invincible id. He thinks he can have the scorpion. He just thinks that, you know, he can cut off the stinger at the same time. And he's finding out that that's not true. But again, that id tells him, I cannot humble myself.
Correct.
To that fact. That's all this is.
That is correct. Here, when you hear people say there are theological arguments against what the scriptures define as election, and whether we are defining election properly or not, meaning predestination, are some people predestined for salvation and some people predestined to go to hell? There are theological arguments against those things that you can make, but almost never are those arguments made. Almost always the argument against election is on the basis of it seems to us unfair. Really? Here's one of the smartest men on planet Earth.
And he is smart.
And he is telling you that I thought I could create a world where we would still have the hymns and the carols without the meaning of the words. That we could have Christianity without Christ. That we could have the accoutrements and the decorations of righteousness and morality that kept the civil order without any authority that is required for that civil order to ever be kept in the first place. If I promise you, there is no argument for Christianity you could make Richard Dawkins hasn't heard or figured he's debunked. If anything, Richard Dawkins and that whole clip is one of the best arguments for election I've ever seen, actually. So the idea that it's not fair... No, I'll bet you no one in this audience is as smart as he is, or at least certainly not smarter. He's debated this at the highest levels all over the planet. And at the end, he really thought he was going to have Christless Christianity, and can't believe it doesn't work out when ye be like God is the law of the land taught.
And here's the kicker. We're being a little too hard on him because he's actually a lot further along than a lot of so-called Christians are.
Well, we'll get
everything
into that
you
next
just
hour,
said,
but yeah.
A lot of Christians going to church every Sunday believe a version of reality. They can have all of it without the real crucified Christ. They believe that, Steve,
actually,
the church.
Actually, Todd, it's worse because they actually don't want the cultural influence that Richard Dawkins is begging the church to have.
I know.
They're abrogating it. No, you take it.
He's ahead of the curve.
You know, there's the absolute irony of this. I just thought of this. There is a very large church here in town. I don't know if you've seen this. I meant to tell you about this off the air. There's a very large church here in town that is one of the most seeker-sensitive churches. You know the one that I'm talking about right away, mm-hmm. Okay? Not too far away from where you live. They are getting dragged virally right now over a perceived communication where somebody on the church staff, the father of this autistic son claims that somebody on the church staff told him that his autistic son or daughter, I can't remember, was being too disruptive during the services and was not welcome back. I don't know if that's true. I don't know about the truth of the situation right now. I don't know if they're being unfairly dragged, but this is the church who makes a priority about being nice, about being well-liked, about being all the things that really Christianity at the end of the day is really, really low on the priority list. This is their priorities, and that's not stopping them from getting absolutely dragged, unfairly or not, on social media. This is emblematic of what Todd was just talking about.
Yeah, this definitely goes along with what we're going to discuss next hour. So let's put a plug or a pin in this conversation here, because it will play into what we're going to talk about next hour for sure. I want to talk about what's going to happen in Florida. What's going to happen in Florida is they're going to pass by referendum a right to an abortion by double digits. That's what's going to happen. And I'm going to tell you why it's going to occur. Because there is no pro-life movement at all that capable of a message other than voting Republican. They have no plan. They have no metric, and they're not even trying to have one. They're not even trying. The goal of being pro-life is, yes, they love the babies, but the Republicans come first. This is why it took so many years to even get legislation that challenged Roe. Well, if we pass a bill that says a person is a person at conception, or a heartbeat signifies life, we'll lose elections. And what a shame that would have been. I mean, we would have ended up with $20 trillion in debt, record inflation. Oh, wait, what a endless war in the Middle East. Indeed, if we had lost those elections, imagine what would have happened. The being a Republican comes before the babies. And it doesn't matter who's in charge. This is true now. I saw some Trump grifters online yesterday losing their bowels. This may cost us Florida.
What does that sound like? Surrender now before it's too late.
It's the same stuff the Romneyites said. It's the same stuff the McCainites said. It's the same stuff the Bushites said. The cake is still being baked the same. The frosting's just zanier. The politicians, particularly the ones paying us, always come ahead of the babies every time. And that's why there's no plan. It's not a movement. Holding an event every January in the dead of winter isn't a movement. It's what goes on all year long that forms a movement. That's an event. It's not a movement. It's like Thanksgiving is an event. It's not a movement. We don't count down the days. We don't have Thanksgiving carols. It's an event. Christmas is a movement, okay? We don't have a pro-life movement. We have a pro-life event. And then we have pro-life outcomes, which is the Republican Party is more important than the babies. The other side has a movement. And that's how you know. Let me show you how that's true. Because they fought us on overturning Roe for 50 years, and the minute it was overturned, they were ready for the new frontier of the fight. The next day, they just flipped a switch, went right into Michigan, went right into Ohio, and they're going to go right into Florida. And it'll be very fascinating to see what'll happen with that state Supreme Court in the next couple of years. On one hand, the people are going to say you've got a constitutional right to an abortion to kill your kid. So does that mean you can just do it whenever you want? You can't put any limits on it? That'll be adjudicated in Florida for the next couple of years. But it's going to lose. The life issue is going to lose, and it's going to lose bad because there's no movement there. Everything is about getting Republicans elected. What did my buddy Chip Roy, what was he losing his mind over in the House last week or a week and a half ago when they were having the budget fight? What was he screaming about? Where are the social conservative groups and leaders? Oh, they were hanging out with Mike Johnson. It's seat at the table stuff. If you want to know why, as maybe the most outspoken evangelical Christian with a large political platform in America, if there's someone more outspoken than me on a larger platform, I'd love to see him and God bless him, because I certainly would be somewhere high on the list, fair? Mm-hmm. Why don't we have the all-star Christian leaders on our show? I'm telling you why. Because I'm not going to lie to you or waste your time. That's why. And that's also where they're not asking to come on, because they know I'm going to ask them questions that point out they have no plan. Their plan is always just vote Republican. What's going to end up happening is because they're not prepared, and we're going to get a bunch of states saying you have a right to kill your kid, we're going to be left with no alternative but abolition as the argument. Because if you have a right to kill your kid, then we have to abolish that right, right? You can't regulate a right. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's no middle ground now. It's going to be one or the other. That's where this is going to go next. Maybe you are thinking, oh no, I can't get healthy and enjoy my love of cereal anymore. That's not necessarily the case. And you don't have to go with chalky protein bars either, because you can get delicious, high quality from Magic Spoon. They've reinvented your favorite childhood cereals to taste great, and each serving contains 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, just 4 to 5 grams of net carbs per serving. It's wholesome. It's high protein. It's gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free. Doesn't mean it has to be taste-free anymore. And you can relive those moments watching your favorite cartoons, just 140 calories a serving. They've launched 2 limited edition flavors just recently, oatmeal cookie and honey graham. These are fresh-baked classics. They taste even better when they're mixed together for a limited time only. Head to magicspoon.com/dace. Grab a custom bundle of cereal and try the magic for yourself. And don't forget to add their limited edition honey graham and oatmeal cookie flavors. Be sure to use promo code DACE at checkout to save $5 off your order. Promo code DACE to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon, so confident in their product that it's backed with 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no question asks. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/dace and use the code DACE to save $5 off. All right, one more thing on this. I want to make sure, because we ran out of time there. There is no pro-life movement for an outcome other than elect Republicans. It does not exist. And that is intentional. That's where the power is. That's where the funding is. Many of these statewide pro-life organizations do not have the funding to go up against these entities on the other side. And if you think a bunch of money is going to be rerouted to Florida to try to win this ballot initiative in a presidential election year where the GOP nominee is both having to fight for his personal fortune in one court and fight to even stay out of prison in others on top. So you have all the legal cost on top of the cost of an election. No way, no how. This thing's going to win by double digits. And so the only question will be how many of those people that are going to come out and say you have a right to kill your child, you have a right to murder your child, are also going to vote for Donald Trump. That will be the only question. It'll be fascinating to see if the Trump people now feel like they have to spend a bunch of money to win a state that maybe, you know, they were thinking they didn't, given what's gone on down there the last few years. Or do the Biden people waste a bunch of money thinking they now can win a state because of this issue, when still the demographics and trend lines in the state are still very much against them. But this thing's going to pass by double digits. There is no organized resistance to it. Yes, I know what I'm saying, and I've said it to many of these people's faces. That's why I don't get invited to their events, guys. Okay, name me somebody who's as outspoken pro-life on as large of a platform as I have that gets invited to speak at fewer like national pro-life confabs than me, which the number is 0. Can you think of somebody? Because they know I'll tell you things like this. They don't want you to know that. They'd love to save the babies in those states, but they want to elect Republicans first and foremost in Washington, D.C. That's the priority. There is no plan. There is no message other than vote Republican. And so any battle aside from that, you know, this is basically the pro-life movement is the French army after World War One, hiding behind the Maginot Line. I mean, Hitler's up north in the Netherlands just taking names and taking territory. He's never going to attack the Maginot Line. He's going to attack you from behind via blitzkrieg. It'll be dancing the jig at the Champs-Élysées by summer 1940, which is exactly what happened. And that is what's happening to the pro-life movement here. Because there's no plan other than, that's why the march is in D.C. Everything has to be in D.C. Anything that gets in the way of electing Republicans is anathema, because that's the ultimate mission. And anybody that wants to challenge me on this, you are invited on here, mano y mano. I'll give you all the time I can, and it won't go well for you. And you know that, and that's why you don't try it.
Fundamentally, is there any issue at all on the right? Any issue at all? And I'm including the Second Amendment in this, where intrinsically, and again, fundamentally, we reject the premise of the left's argument. Is there any issue whatsoever? Because I include the Second Amendment, because a lot of times I just hear that couched as, well, this is a liberty issue, this is a freedom issue. Is there any issue, pick any issue whatsoever, where we fundamentally reject the left's premise?
I would say the closest two issues we come to that are guns. But you're right, we sometimes fail on that front, but we at least try most of the time. I would say we're doing it on education right now.
Sure.
But look how that's happening. Is that happening because we funneled a bunch of money and got a bunch of Republicans elected to Washington, D.C.?
Nope.
Nope. It's because you have guys like Chris Rufo and Corey DeAngelis that are doing this
guerrilla
at a parochial,
yeah,
local level, yes, state by state, and they're destroying the premise of the other side's education arguments. All right? And there's no money to be made for pro-life groups fighting this out state by state, and that's why they don't do it. Because in the end, the priority is electing Republicans. I would say right now, most of us on the right are truly trying to challenge the premise of the tranny stuff. Okay? I know we're all frustrated by, you know,
Transgender Day of Visibility.
Yeah,
here's our guest,
Caitlin
Jenner.
I know we're all
Jenner,
frustrated,
yeah,
because the number one metric in Donald Trump world and for those associated with him is, will you slurp Donald Trump? And Bruce Jenner does. Okay, and so he gets his own bathroom at Mar-a-Lago. I know we're all frustrated by that, but if we're being honest, that's pretty. He's the rare exception. There's not like a fleet of conservative trannies we're rolling out right now. We're doing a pretty decent job on our side of truly challenging the premise of that argument, compared to especially compared to what we haven't done on a lot of these arguments my entire career up until this point. So I would say, the Bruce Jenner ingratiating himself, ass kissing his way into Trump world aside, we are doing a pretty good job attacking the premise on that argument,
well,
I think.
The fact that we are, and that there's another ingredient added to the mix where we could gain strength from, it makes it all the more pathetic that we seem to be going backwards in the life movement. We have a real example on another fundamental Christian issue.
Correct.
That we say, do it like that. Yet after Roe, and I mentioned off air, it seems to be Roe now is functioning like the Defense of Marriage Act, where an objective good happens, but because our side is just ready to put it on cruise control after that, and the other, now this side is going 50 states like Rufo, whereas we're sitting back and just what? Still smoking the fumes? I don't know.
So we went state by state on constitutional carry. We're going state by state right now on undermining the education establishment. We're going state by state right now on banning tranny surgeries and getting guys out of women's sports.
True.
Notice the trend here.
Yeah.
Anything that requires access or action from Washington, D.C., we have lost. Anything that we take action aside from Washington, D.C., we can win. The problem is the entire pro-life fight is gerrymandered. It's grandfathered into D.C., and the organizations that are there simply will not survive democratizing that issue. They won't survive localizing that issue. They'll go out of business. And that's why they don't do it. And they're kept there by Republican leadership. Hey, we need your pro-life badge to lie to the listeners and viewers on the Steve Day Show that we're really in, and the shows just like it that we're really pro-life. And that's why there's no plan to fight the other side on this state by state. It's not a movement. It's a political action committee. Those aren't the same thing. Let's switch gears here for some Pop Culture Tuesday. Because this should be a trivial matter. But we are talking about professional football, and even in its declining state, where maybe the number one pick in the NFL draft is modeling his pink phone and lipstick and fingernail polish, okay? It's still one of the last remaining, on some level, one of the last remaining masculine-driven meritocracies left in America. Fair?
Yes.
It may not be operating at the efficient level that we all would want, or the level it was when we were growing up, all right, and Lester Hayes and Jack Tatum were taking guys' heads off, and, you know, Fred Biletnikoff is basically human masking tape, okay? Maybe it's not that, all right? Okay? But it's still one of the last remaining, even in its current state, masculine-driven meritocracies left in the culture. Fair?
Yes.
Okay. There's been a huge emphasis on injuries, particularly head injuries in recent years. The number one play in football where injuries occur is the kickoff. And if you've ever done special teams, man, from, you know, peewee to high school, even the higher levels in college or the NFL, you can see why. Head on a swivel, running downfield full bore. You know, lots can happen in those situations. Haven't been involved in those myself at a much younger age, all right? Great way, by the way, for someone to target you, or for you to target someone that you don't like and get away with it, all right? So the NFL has done what it can to lessen the injury problems in the kickoff, to the point that the kickoffs are, by and large, an irrelevant play in the NFL. I mean, Todd, you and I remember growing up, Mel Gray, Billy White Shoes Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were household names. Everybody knew these guys were. Who's the Barrett? Devin Hester, okay?
Sure.
He was also a great defensive back, but these were guys that could change the game, and this was a big part of the game, and it's really not anymore. The return specialist being a name player in the NFL, not really a thing. So the NFL is trying to bring the kickoff back now, and they're doing it by adopting what the XFL, the Vince McMahon, the former Vince McMahon league, what they invented a few years ago. All right, can we play that video, Victoria? Here's what this looks like. All right, so
a nice wander is back to kick it away. Keenan Reynolds for Seattle. That kick better go beyond the 20, and it does. To the 15, here's Reynolds up the middle of the field, out to the 31-yard line. Antoine Williams makes
it's basically like a punt or a free kick after a safety. All right. Everybody's lined up down at the 30-yard line. No one can run until the kickoff returner catches or touches the ball. And then once that happens, you're not getting a head start 40 yards downfield to take somebody's head off. It's basically a line of scrimmage play, and there were several of these returned for touchdowns in the XFL. When they went to this, you saw on the play we showed you that it didn't go for that many yards. So the NFL is going to this. And there's been a lot of discussion. Is this another example of the effeminization of the league that we're on our way to flag football? Or is this actually a smart and clever way to bring back a play, but it's also a play that disproportionately injures players more than any other does? So to try to limit that by not having guys running 50 yards full speed, which can greatly increase the risk of injury on that play. What do you think? Is it smart, or is it emasculation? Who wants to go first?
Oh, I think it's way smarter than the sport overall. You know, I disagree. It's not a masculine-driven meritocracy anymore, and it's impossible for it to be, as long as people on both sides of the ball, the players and the people running it and the fans, are boys who can shave. So it's not that anymore. This play is actually... And it's because of the soap opera that's involved in so much that now we might not have eyes to see what is really that. This just seems smart to me. I'm not threatened by this at all. And most people who are, again, who are intoxicated by the nonsense of the spirit of the ages, it applies to all sports, not just football. So I think this play is way smarter than the overall state of football in general. And if we thought more along the lines of doing things along this play, we might be able to call it a masculine driven meritocracy. I think we actually have it reversed.
Okay.
Aaron? So I think this is really dumb. Again, talking about the premise, how did we get here? And you laid that out. I've noticed something that there was for years, There's even a documentary, there's actually a drama, I believe, a feature film that had a theatrical release about this phenomenon with NFL players called CTE. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce what that was talking about. But I remember in the early to mid 2010s, this was everywhere. CTE, CTE, CTE. This is a big issue, you know, player safety. This was a huge issue. I remember hearing about that everywhere through the offseason, through the regular season of the NFL. And what did we surmise? They were trying to take down the NFL because what? You just laid it out. It was the last meritocracy, masculine-driven meritocracy, one of the last institutions. And then what happened? We heard about CTE, CTE, CTE all the time. This is a dangerous sport. This is a dangerous sport. Should Jimmy and Joey be allowed to play football? We heard all about this until when? About August of 2016, or maybe it was 2015. And what happened in August, I believe it was 2016? Colin Kaepernick took a knee. I believe the spirit of the age, these forces that be within them, the institutions realized that, hey, there's actually a lot of Colin Kaepernicks in the NFL. Why do we need CTE when we can just leverage these guys? So that's what I think is precipitating all of this conversation. I don't think it was about player safety to begin with, ever. I really don't. I think it was about bringing down one of the last institutions of masculine-driven meritocracies. Now, however, if this was purely, if the motives behind all of these changes to try to make the games more safe, if the motives to do that were as pure as the driven snow, then I'm where Todd is. I actually like this idea. One, it's a double whammy. The risk of collisions when you've got guys running down a field, you know, 30 yards running into each other at full speed, you're limiting that. But you're also getting back to the heart of football, which is in this configuration, there's actually some strategy. There's actually some, hey, you block this guy, you block that guy. There's some strategy involved with it, which is at the heart of this game. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds where it's a little bit safer. You're not, you know, putting people at undue risk. And there's some strategy as well to make those plays, you know, meaningful instead of meaningless. But I just go back to the premise of why we're even here in the first place. And I reject that.
Fascinating.
But what do you think about the play specifically?
I'm much more open to using modern means of doing old-fashioned things. You know, like, I'm not as... They've gotten me there by the way they've applied it. You know, but I'm not as opposed to the fundamental use of instant replay as you are. I mean, the way that it's been done, how long, it's just ridiculous how long it takes and everything else. I mean, I just remember sitting there in 90-degree heat in Omaha watching Michigan in the College World Series a few years ago, and they got stuff done in literally a minute, okay? Where you're sitting out there in that sun, if it takes 20 minutes, you're feeling it. There's just no reason it can't be done that way. You're just choosing not to, okay? But I tend to agree with you. You know, it's still football. That's a football-looking play to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it, per se. But I am fascinated that you, who thinks they've lost their status, likes the play, and Aaron, who thinks they've retained some of it, does not. I think that's fascinating. We'll come back. Idolatry or not is next. Back here with Hour 2, live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin, Aaron McIntyre, and all of you. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox. That's steve@SteveDace.com, DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can also, if you wouldn't mind, leave me a 5-star review. If you like the show, of course, and you are a podcast listener, please do that on the podcast platform that you prefer. If you have yet to do this, please do this as well. If you're a podcast listener, hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, follow. And that way, every time we do a brand new episode, it'll show up in your feed every single time. Several of you contacted me during the break. I do need to make a correction. I was not aware of this, so this is my bad. The amendment in Florida requires a 60% threshold to pass. So I do think it will be double-digit approval. Will it get to 60%? I don't know. That's about what the Ohio one did, right? Wasn't it about 60-40 in Ohio?
I think so,
yeah.
Wasn't it about that? All right. So that's a state also that's had a massive demographic shift to the red like Florida has in the last few years. Now, it was a standalone event for the most part, right?
Yeah.
There's not going to be a massive turnout event like a presidential election driving people to vote in this, like there will be in Florida, I would presume. So I don't know. I'm inclined to think the Trump people are probably likely to say, we don't think you can get to 60 in Florida, so we're not now going to redirect resources to the state that we didn't think we had to. And the other side maybe might be more inclined to go ahead and try it, thinking if we can get to 55, 56, just organically, if we can push this to 60, well, those aren't people that are going to go turn out and vote for Donald Trump probably, right? They're probably going to vote for Joe Biden. And just so you know, this is what we're talking about here is largely how George W. Bush got reelected in 2004. I mean, Karl Rove and the Republican Party, they weren't always idiots.
Yeah.
Okay, they weren't always idiots. It's funny, when they want to get their guys elected, they can be pretty smart. When one of our guys or someone that's not one of theirs is trying to win, they're suddenly all idiots. So when the marriage amendment battles were waging all over the country, they made sure to put a marriage amendment, I think it was on the ballot in both Florida and Ohio, I want to say. And the turnouts in favor of those marriage amendments ended up elevating George W. Bush. And those were... At that point in time in our history, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia were the three swing states that determined who won presidential elections. And that marriage amendment, I think in Florida and Ohio, I remember Ohio for sure. I think Florida was included too. Helped George W. Bush win. And that's the last time, by the way, that a Republican won the popular vote. The number two issue in the exit polls that year, by the way. Moral values was the number two issue, just behind the economy, which is always number one. And so there's a history of sides placing these kinds of things on ballots to drive up turnout, you know, of their base.
Or drive down. There was a marriage amendment actually in Minnesota when I was there, and that was placed, I believe, on the ballot or allowed on the ballot by Democrats in order to... or I think it was allowed on the ballot by Republicans to try to prove a point to their own base that, mm-hmm. hey, this can't win at a statewide level.
It is fascinating. The Democratic Party thinks its responsibility is to win because of its base's values and principles. The Republican Party wants to convince you that you have to win in spite of yours. That's a pretty good summation of the two parties, don't you think?
It has certainly come to be.
I mean, who's in a Democrat swing state? Who's in a swing state this year trying to win as a Democrat or a swing district, losing their mind this week over a trainee day of visibility over Easter? Hey, you're going to cost us seats doing this.
Yeah,
anybody
no,
doing that?
No.
Not a single one. Things that make you go, because they have a movement. They believe things. We don't. This part of the show brought to you by our friends at Patriot Mobile. For a decade now, they've been America's only American wireless service provider. This is one of the few industries where the parallel economy is fully in place. You no longer have to give money to people who hate you. Give it to Patriot Mobile instead, and they've got an outstanding U.S.-based customer service team. They'll give you access to dependable nationwide coverage. They've got multiple networks within their main network, so if at any time you need to switch to one of those because you're in a part of town or a part of the country now where one network is superior to the other, they'll do that for you. They'll customize your plan for you. You can keep your number, change your number, keep your phone, change your phone. They just do an excellent job overall. And if you want to make the switch today, use my name, Steve, as your promo code, and you'll get a free activation when you do at patriotmobile.com/Steve. That's patriotmobile.com/Steve. Use the offer code Steve at patriotmobile.com/Steve. All right, let's get to some idolatry or not, shall we? So Scott Rasmussen is the founder of Rasmussen Polling. He sold it several years ago. So no, it wasn't Scott Rasmussen who was, you know, basically acting like a Trump super PAC on Twitter during the primary. Just completely and totally unprofessional behavior, frankly. Wasn't him. He sold the company a long time ago. All right. But he now has his own polling company. RMG Research Group is what it's called. Okay. RMG Research. He did some pre-Easter polling, and I've known Scott off and on over the years. One of the, in terms of the polling side of what we do here, just one of the guys most driven by integrity I've met. Okay. He did a pretty big poll for a question like this, over 1,000 people nationwide, registered voters, to get their views on Christianity and some of its core teachings and principles and claims heading into Easter. Here are the results of what Scott is reporting. When asked, the man known to history as Jesus Christ actually existed and walked the earth. 83% said true. Only 5% said false. When asked, Jesus Christ was the Son of God. 76% said true. 11% said false. When asked, Jesus Christ died for your sins. 75% say true. 11% said false. When told to say true or false, Jesus Christ physically rose from the dead, meaning it wasn't a metaphor, it wasn't spiritual, but in his physical body, he walked out, that he was buried in, he walked out of that same tomb in that same body. Okay. 68% said true, 13% said false. When asked, Jesus walked on water. So an example of a supernatural miracle. Okay. 65% said true, 14% said false. Look at the net margins here. Plus 78, plus 65, plus 64, plus 55, plus 51. So this again is polling data from, I think, one of the best I've met or encountered in this business in my career. Make sense of this, because Jesus said, by their fruit, you will know them. Why do you call me Lord if you do not do what I say? All right. There's no reason for people to there, this isn't even 10 years ago, let alone 30 or 40 years ago, where there was some societal significance to identifying with Christianity. All the cultural motivations and incentivizations all are going against, are going the other way. You're gaining nothing from this. Nothing. You know, Pew, what did Pew point out? A couple of years ago, the largest growth among religious affiliation in the United States are the nuns, right? N-O-N-E-S, not the other nuns you were hoping it was. The actual nuns, N-O-N-E-S, nuns, okay? So there's no reason to just assent to these things. That you're not gaining anything. No one would be, you might have lied to a pollster about this 10, 15, 20 years ago, so you didn't look like, you know, you were one of those crazy atheists, but no one cares anymore. You know, by and large, there's no incentive to align yourself with some with these creeds and statements anymore. There's no incentive to do that. So then, I think you should assume that on a generic level, a lot of these people sincerely believe that they believe these things. Maybe not all, but a lot of them do, probably. Fair?
Yeah.
Okay. So then explain the condition of the culture given this data. Reconcile these two things.
This is one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
Scary.
And providential timing once again, Steve. You, and it's the closest thing as show prep that we have. You actually sent out the email to us, not because you're planning ahead really, but you decided on that day, I saw this, we're going to do this on this day. So I don't know how 3 days ago
right. We
saw that. You didn't know that we were going to talk about that Richard Dawkins clip.
No, I had no
this
idea that clip was even out there.
Richard Dawkins is ahead of the curve. He doesn't believe these things. He's one of the ones who doesn't believe in these things, but he thinks that the outcomes of believing those things are more important than the people who say they believe in those things. Because if you actually believe in those things at that level of percentage, our culture should look nothing like what it does today. And that's why this is so deeply sad. And why Richard Dawkins is actually ahead of the curve. To your point, Steve, there's no... even though this is ostensibly anonymous, but however the culture psychologically works on us, believing things at this level should be worked out of you by now. You don't feel like you have to default and check the box and feel bad psychologically. Look at, we have Transgender Day of Visibility. This is deeply sad. This is, again, depending on which version, second or third commandment, this is using the Lord's name in vain. This is flat out mocking God. It's appalling.
It's scary. You just quoted one scripture there, and there's a lot of people, a majority of people, I have to think, or at least close to a majority, at least a plural, at the very least a plurality of people in our culture. This was over 2 days, 1,000 people. That's a pretty good sample size, who I have to think, based on the state of the culture, are going to be told one day, depart from me, you workers of iniquities, I never knew you. That's scary. If you were walking into a real life haunted house, maybe this isn't a great analogy, but we're going to go with it. A real life haunted house. And you were told by somebody, hey, at the end of that hallway that you're walking down, there's a wood chipper there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You have the opportunity to turn around. Oh, I know there's a wood chipper there, but I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. You had the opportunity. You knew the truth. You knew the truth. You assented to the truth. You were told the truth and you believed it, but you kept walking towards that wood chipper. What are you? You're a fool. But the only person at the end of the day that you can blame is yourself for continuing on that path. The cognitive dissonance that our comfort allows us. I don't know how many more times we can shout this into seemingly the ether before we internalize it. And I'm talking about we collectively as a country. I just, the number of people who are allowed this level of cognitive dissonance, and I'm talking about people who will generally vote with us, agree with us on the issues, they are allowed so much to say one thing and act another. Because at the end of the day, they can go home to their perfect American dream in their Pleasant Valley. And what it's going to take to change that is hideous. I'm struck with this notion that what it's going to have to change, what it's going to take to change that sentiment will be absolutely hideous to behold. But I'm left with no other explanation that that's what it's going to take. I don't know what that looks like, whether it's economic, whether it's outside. Certainly looks like it's coming from within, but something is going to have to change on a molecular level in this country for something like that to stay the same and for us to reverse course.
Did you have something you wanted to say before I responded to what he just said? It looked like you were chomping at the bit.
I'm just in stream of consciousness right now, but please go ahead. I'll have more.
I want to carve out one phrase you used there at the end of your analysis, Aaron. You said the molecular level. Let me tell you where all 100%. You know what? I'll do this. Paul says mercy triumphs over judgment. 99%. 99% of the blame for this disconnect. We're again. There is no incentive to claim any semblance of Christianity in the culture. You're gaining nothing from it anymore. There's no advantage to be had. None. There's no benefit of the doubt. There's no default. None. I mean, we're at a point. I mean, when I saw Kirk Herbstreit and now who's his counterpart at Fox? Joe Klatt. When I saw these are the two biggest voices in college football right now. They're the number one analysts for the two networks that basically run the sport, ESPN and Fox. When I saw them both put out very clear faith-affirming, creed-affirming statements on Easter, my initial thought was, oh, how much longer are they going to get away with doing that? Yeah, I mean, that's the culture we're in now. There's no reason for these people to lie. They're gaining nothing from it. There's no institution that is looking to give some benefit of the doubt to the group of people that claim these, that still hold these beliefs. So then let's assume a majority of the people in these huge majorities, given what I just said, believe that they believe this, and maybe even do. And on a case-by-case basis, either believe that they believe it or actually do. How do we explain the situation in the culture today? Well, Aaron, you said it. Something has to change on a molecular level. And you know why it's got to change on a molecular level? Because it's on a molecular level where this problematic circumstance was perpetrated. 99% of the blame for this is at the feet and doorstep of the local church. 99. And I would have said 100, but I'll offer a little mercy. Your pastor did not come up with a clever, nuanced way to welcome and usher people into the kingdom that did not risk offending them or not require any form of confrontation of the cultural influences that are vying for their very affections at the, and hearts and minds at the same time. He did not. He's just a coward, dangerously naive, weak, or dishonest, or some of all. This is absolutely at the feet of the local church. Because what this polling data is showing you, do not be deceived. God will not be mocked. We will always reap what we sow. This idea that we could spread Christianity, particularly in these suburbs where people have a lot of discretionary income and can give a lot of money. I'm sure that's a coincidence, don't you think? I'm sure that's a coincidence that we specifically thought we could do this in the parts of the country that have stored up wealth, discretionary income, and are largely already living in these places because they are trying to get away from the cultural rot gut and confrontations existing elsewhere. I think that I'm sure it's a coincidence. I'm sure that it is. This idea that you're going to create this like neutral environment that's hermetically sealed off from the culture, and you're going to have the public library doing drag queen story time hour on one side of the street and the massive mega church complex campus on the other side of the street teaching the fundamentals of the faith without any application at all. None. So these are all abstracts. It's all Jesus walked on water. Well, what does that mean for me? So it means, oh, so he commands the natural elements. He has supernatural power as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Does that mean that same power that let him walk on water could put my marriage back together? Could bring my prodigal son home? We don't know, because no one ever asks. It's never applied. Jesus physically rose out of there. What does that mean? I just believe that and I'm saved, and that's all there is to that. That's it. There's nothing more to that. It's just that elementary. It's kept there. Nope. That's the most significant event in the history of the cosmos since he spoke it into existence. Okay? The ramifications of what that means, that God laid down his life, took it up again by his own power, and walked out for everyone to see in the same shell of the body that was tortured and killed. What that means has literally cosmic implications, man. But no, it's just a trite thing to believe so that your sins get forgiven. We don't ever consider the cosmic implications of this. Why? Well, because they're cosmic. We want to keep them in here where it's safe. Where it's safe. That's the explanation for most of this disconnect. we got what we asked for. We said, Lord, we don't want to interfere. We don't want to engage the culture. We don't want any confrontation. We don't want any problems. We don't want to get politicized. We just want to be in this neutral space where we just kind of teach the core elements of basic Christianity 101. No one ever moves on to solid food, as Peter laments in one of his epistles. Just we're just breastfeeding now. We're just breastfeeding over and over and over again, spiritual formula into infants over and over again, year after year, the same people, decade after decade after decade after decade. That's what we wanted, because they're really wealthy in suburbs. They'll give us a lot of money. City won't get mad. I'll have a nice career. I don't have to get Bonhoeffered. I don't have to even contemplate the things Bonhoeffer did, where he went and he started his ministerial career as a pacifist. Then he's involved in Project Valkyrie to assassinate the leader of his country. I don't want to walk in those shoes. I'm good. So just give me that. You got what you asked for. That's exactly, the Lord answered your prayer. You have received your reward in full. Why complain? Take your 30 pieces. Take your public appreciation. Take your nice guy reputation. Take your everybody loves Pastor so-and-so affirmation. It's your potter's field. The Lord gave you the ministry you asked for. This disconnect is in this very data. The same disconnect, Todd. The same disconnect. The idea that these things are abstract thoughts minus current cultural consequences, let alone cosmic implications. Okay, I said this prayer. I won't go to hell. There's no discipling of the nations here. Nothing. Why we don't have men's ministries in most churches? Because men don't want to get together and endlessly talk. All of it's in this data. The data doesn't lie. I 100% believe this data. Because it lines up with, we went from the Southern Baptist Convention of Adrian Rogers, where we're, and his ilk, literally going seminary to seminary, congregation to congregation, purging the heretics, firing them. That's what Adrian Rogers and his folks did, to the most prominent Southern Baptist pastor of this age, has a purpose-driven life just waiting for you. The data lines up with it, actually. It's perfect. Yeah, I asked Jesus into my heart, and then no one told me what that meant after that, and what was expected of me after that, and then what I was supposed to do after that, and I'm good. So, you know, this church makes me feel good. I'm going to give my money, and they're going to take it and make me feel good. And then they're going to keep making me feel good. So I keep giving them my money. And, you know, it's transactional here. Not transformational really at all. I think this data is 100% right on, because it lines up with the rotten fruit of what we see in the culture.
Tell me we wouldn't be off with those margins that you saw a little bit ago on the far right. Tell me we wouldn't be better off if that was just actually down to like a quarter or a third of what you saw there, where it's only 15% difference between people who actually believe these creeds about Christianity, believe these truths about the person of Jesus Christ, versus those who say they were false. Tell me we wouldn't be better off if that were the case, if those 15-20% of people actually 100%. Believed those and were 100%. activated by this. Is this not Second Peter?
Yep.
Better for you to have not known the way of righteousness than known it and turned your back on
Correct.
It? That's what we're talking about.
Correct.
Here.
Yes.
This is why Steve, you've mentioned many times how you love the story of King Josiah rediscovering what people believe to be the book of Deuteronomy. And then he's like, we have to go back, is what happens.
Yeah.
And he's so convicted by it, as you say, he doesn't have like a tonal discussion. He goes and tears down the Asherah poles, right? This is why this is worse. It's showing that we still have It's Deuteronomy isn't lost. We have it. We say he believe it. But it's not only not convicting at all, but we make excuses for the devil, like in Iowa, where our pastors are saying, you know, in order to worship the baby Jesus, we still have to worship the devil. This is so much worse. I mean, how we are seeing it. I know the Old Testament has some dicey stories in there, but hey, 21st century American church, hold my beer.
Just to give you an indication of this. This is what this is the perception of the American church, in my estimation. It's a very anecdotal story, but about a week ago or so, Bella and I went out to eat at a local restaurant here, and we were waited upon by a very nice young man. I sound old when I tell somebody they're a young man, but it was one of those just layup witnessing opportunities that sometimes the Lord gives to us, and Bella and I prayed for our meal before we ate, and the waiter came over, nice young man. He said, hey, I saw you praying. What denomination are you? And we told him. And he said, okay, so are you New Testament Christians or Old Testament Christians? Have you ever heard that before? I didn't know what he meant necessarily
by
that.
Not since the Council of Nicaea, where St. Nicholas punched the guy in the face that was the original one to try to make that claim.
And come to find out, he told us he was very new in his faith walk. We told him where we went to church, encouraged him to come kick the tires a little bit. But he had this perception about the church. There's these New Testament Christians, probably the nice ones, and then there's the Old Testament Christians. That's the perception, at least I would wager, of the American church as a whole. And going back to what I said just a few minutes ago, we would be better off if there were 15% of people, a margin of 15% of people who affirmed those truths about the person and work of Jesus Christ, who were actually activated by that belief, than if we had the margins that we saw over there just a few moments ago. Because the problem is let's say there are 10% of believers in this country who are fully formed in their worldview. I know it's not that high of a number, and are activated by it. They are then deluded by those, deluded as in diluting water or diluting a liquid or something like that. They are diluted by the rest of those claiming the same moniker that they are. That's a huge problem. And again, aside from shaking us out of our comfort, I'm not sure how you get around that.
You don't.
You don't.
You don't. I can't speak about your
without
guy,
Josiah-like leaders. You don't shake people.
No, your
out
guy
of it.
Who yeah. said was talking about when you went to that conference, and a senior statesman said, "Don't you understand that if we really get revival, how much has to and will change?" Most of us aren't even claiming, even
because we're way too comfortable. Yeah. We would have to suffer to the extent that we would even receive the revival.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that could be the answer to your Asbury.
Asbury, yeah.
That could be the answer to your question, asking where's the fruit of this. Hey, you know, it was cool for a while, but, you know, we all sang and asked for repentance and went home, and we're good. We're comfortable again. That could be a reason why that thing took no permanent root beyond just the event
that I know
occurred.
Of anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% believe in this data. 100%. Because it tracks with what's occurred in most of the churches. I mean, if you plant this seed, you're going to get this fruit. God's not going to be mocked. You're going to reap what you sow. And we're reaping that whirlwind now. And we're at a point now where Richard Dawkins is much more interested in the church having cultural impact than much of the local mm-hmm. churches. That's a damnable thing. Well, this is a fitting segue to talking about Marxism here in a few minutes, because one thing Marxism always leads to: food shortages. So, you know, that you never know, that could be the next thing. Oh, that could never happen here. Gosh, how many of those have we lived through the last few years, Todd? That could never
all
happen
of them
here. Yes,
everyone,
this is about the last one left. Okay. And about this time last year, we were thinking, remember the mysterious food processing plants that were burning up? We were thinking this time last year, this might be next, like more nexter than we thought. All right. Make sure that you have the peace of mind that comes from our friends at My Patriot Supply. Get their 3-month emergency food kit with 22 food and drink varieties. So plenty, at least you'll know, you know, if we're sitting here in a dystopian future, you've got a pretty good assortment of varied foods. Includes breakfast, lunch, dinner, even drinks and snacks. The full complement of the 2,000 plus calories of nutrition that you need every day. Sealed inside, ultra durable, 4-layer packaging. They last up to 25 years with proper storage. So take $200 off each kit if you get it on my site, preparewithdace.com. Preparewithdace.com, and they shipped fast and free as well. And $200 off. And they ship fast and free at preparewithdace.com. That's preparewithdace.com. Kate Gorka formerly served as the director for civil society at the Heritage Foundation. Talking about next generation Marxism, what is it and how to combat it? Kate, it's a pleasure to have you with us here on The Blaze today. How are you?
Steve, thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
Well, let's start actually with that question. What's next generation Marxism and how is it different from every other generation of Marxism?
Yeah, super important. Well, fundamentally, it's different from original Marxism because that focused on the worker as the locus of revolution, right? But as we've learned again and again throughout time, workers actually don't really want to revolt. They like their jobs. They like the opportunity to better themselves. So what happened after the failure of the revolutions in Europe, groups of intellectuals got together and said, why did it fail? And Antonio Gramsci from Italy said, well, you have to change the overall thinking of the society. Mm-hmm. So that was the beginning of cultural Marxism. And then it morphed further when it came here to the United States, particularly as, you know, leaders from the Frankfurt School came here. And what you saw happening here is these ideas got picked up by the radical students of the 60s, particularly groups like Students for a Democratic Society. And what they discovered was if you make racism and eventually ethnicity, and then even later still things like gender and sexual orientation, the locus of revolution, then you can be successful. So that's what next gen Marxism is.
So this audience would be very aware of Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist, his long march to the institutions theory, prison letters. These are things we discussed many, many times on this show. They would, I think, be our audience would be pretty familiar with that. But I want to take it to why I think he suggested this. And you mentioned the SDS and the Weathermen and the radical groups that we saw coming out of the counterculture in the 60s. I think what they figured out is that, you know, Marx said famously, religion is the opiate of the people, right? And so people are not merely technocratic vehicles, and they need a purpose. I would argue as a Christian, it's because we're made in the likeness and image of God. We have that Blaise Pascal hole in the heart. But so we need something existential. We need something metaphysical. We need something beyond, I'm just doing this to mark time and to make money, but there's a purpose and a cause beyond myself to this to motivate us. And I think the next generation Marxists figured out is by applying these things to cultural indicators, as you just said, you come up with literally a counter ethos, pathos, all of it, another reason for being. And prior to this, there wasn't a challenge to the supremacy of Christianity in the culture. You may not want to be a Christian. You may not agree with it. You may not even want to live by it. But there wasn't a superior or even a competitive alternative metric for how to live life and why we're here. And so inevitably, Christianity just kept prevailing in every generation. These next gen Marxists changed that. Right. We've got Darwinism with our own creation myth. We've even got our own apocalyptic, you know, judgment via climate alarmism. OK. And so everything's existential now. It's not just power, you know, to the worker and things of technocratic means that Karl Marx was talking about. But it's a philosophy now. It's a way of life now, because something has to give me purpose and meaning. And I frankly don't think much of the American right has figured that out yet.
That is a great point. I mean, I think we figured it out to the extent that I do think people talk about the fact that, for example, environmentalism has become a new religion, right? And I think you're seeing it with some of these other things, like, you know, the whole DEI. I mean, it is incredible how far into the culture it has seeped. And it's everywhere. It's shaping everything, you know, local government, schools, everybody has embraced this new sort of creed. And I, you know, but at the same time, I do think that these new, you know, cultural worldviews are ultimately going to fall short, though, because they really don't get at sort of larger ideas. They are reducing people to a kind of one-dimensional person, right? This is one of the big failings of Marx. He reduced man to his economic being. And we all know, yeah, okay, we worry about how we're going to eat and survive, but there is much more to us than that. Mm-hmm. And I would say you can make that same argument today. There is so much more to a person than the color of their skin mm-hmm. or their sexual orientation, right? Except the next gen Marxists have tried to reduce people to that one characteristic.
Totally agree. I just think that without, you know, reintroducing the previous spiritual framework that answered these questions, that had answers for these challenges. You may not have liked all the answers, may not have agreed with them all, but had sufficient answers for why the world is the way it is, why we are the way we are, and what can we do about it. I don't believe that we're going to beat even their shallow pseudo claims of existential meaning with just our own free market technocraticism, our own YOLO. I think if we're going to have to exceed the existential stakes that they are playing for, and in my view, I think there's only one worldview on the planet that does that.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, a lot of my work has been focused on reaching out to people through the church. And, you know, it's really interesting because so I have my book writing side, but I also have my political side. And I'm currently running for the chair of the Fairfax County GOP. And one of the things we all talk about is, you know, the like-minded people, for the most part, the people who share our values, many of them will be in churches. Mm-hmm. And yet many of them are not voting, mm-hmm. which, you know, just astounds me. And I think a lot of our work has to be in bringing those who do have the faith forward to fight for their faith, to vote for their values.
Here is the next generation of Marxism, Kate, that I am actually wary of. And it's because it's come at a time that we are heavily secularized. And I mean, you just mentioned a symptom of it. We talk about it on our show all the time. This is the first time in the history of the church, capital the church. So basically, you know, some form of Christian orthodoxy that, you know, Catholics, Protestants, Orthodoxes have agreed on for centuries as the central tenets of the faith while they argue about everything else. OK, this is the first time in the history of that of the church that it's in the West and America included. It's basically surrendered. Like the church has, and we've seen times in history where it's been driven underground, where by Islam it was driven out of places like Lebanon and Asia Minor or Turkey. But there's never been a time that it just kind of quit. It just kind of abrogated. It's just, we're not interested. We're just going to do something else. That's kind of where the era we're in now. And I think because of that, I am concerned with what the Shycoms have figured out. What the Shycoms have figured out is that if we give people some morsels of accoutrements of modernity, that we allow them on some level to be tied into the larger world. And of course, today's technology allows that and for them to police that in ways it never did before. But you get a cell phone, you get a flat screen, big screen, LED TV over there too. Okay. I mean, if we give them some of them, these things with us controlling it, of course, but some notions of freedom at a certain, you know, granular level, they'll let us do whatever we want to them because their most basic innate needs of their flesh have been met. And I see today's Democratic Party going down the same road. of the Shycoms in some of those respects. You've even seen people like Warren Buffett and others say, man, I wish we were more like China. That people are controllable if you do fill their bellies and you give them some form of a dopamine hit to the pleasure centers of their brain. They'll give you the rest of their soul if you do that. I do think that's something that Chinese style Marxism has figured out since Tiananmen Square. What are your thoughts?
I would agree, but at the same time, I'm going to push back a little bit. And it may be because I live in Northern Virginia, which is actually an incredible place to be a Christian. We have, I would say, an absolutely thriving Christian community of all denominations. Our churches, our Catholic churches are packed. We have huge evangelical churches. So, you know, it just doesn't go away. The true faith does not go away. And I, you know, ultimately, I wake up every morning and I just pray to continue to rely on God, to put my faith in Him, to put my trust in Him. And I think that's all we can do. You know, we can fight for it to an extent. And I think one of the really important ways we do that is what you do. And it's what I've done with this book is, we need to educate our people. We need to educate our voters. We need to educate our Christians on how insidious this threat is. But I, you know, I trust in God and I trust in the faith and I trust in the American people. And truly, I'm kind of optimistic right now. I think we're going to beat this thing.
I've got about 2 minutes here. Let's talk about the final part of the subtitle, How to Combat It. What is something, someone's at home listening to this, watching this right now on The Blaze, listening to it on a podcast later, I'm a homeschool stay-at-home mom, I'm a dad who works, you know, two jobs, we're a family that owns a business, all right, so I can't do this all the time, I've got other obligations and duties, but I know this is part of the role I have to play as a citizen here. What's something that those people could do that's applicable and practical and achievable?
Okay. My guess is, first of all, that most of your listeners are already pretty engaged, right? So I don't think I'm talking to people who are sitting on the couch not doing anything. I think above all, stop being afraid. Don't be afraid to share your values, to speak out for your values, to put the Trump yard sign or whatever it is, put it in your yard. Speak to your neighbors. You know, I think the thing that's been so disheartening for me is to see the degree to which people like me, people who share my values, are cowed by the liberals, and we can't do that. And I think a key piece of that is finding like-minded people and coming together and sort of sharing the fight, because it's really helpful once you discover that you are not alone. And what I've seen in the years that I've been working with, you know, parents who are fighting back for their children's education, as soon as one person has the courage to stand up and speak out, I'm telling you, a whole phalanx comes in behind you. There are tons of people out there who feel as we do. We just need to come together and fight this together.
Well said. Name of the book, Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. Kate Gorka, one of the co-authors, along with Mike Gonzalez. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on The Blaze, and good luck with the book, Kate. Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. I mean, she echoed something there, gentlemen, we talked a lot about during the pushback to COVID. You know, you can't be the only dad who thinks it's a terrible idea to put a mask on a six-year-old kid. You can't be. There's got to be others. So, yeah, I mean, I still think if it's just you, you should consider speaking up. But they can do something with you. They can discredit you, run you out of there. What if 10 of you guys show up? 15, 20. You know, this is what we get to with the scripture that says the triple braided cord is tougher to break. It's why I think we have to get out of churches now that make us comfortably numb, even if they've done nothing heretically wrong. Okay, we are in open spiritual warfare now. We need to be in places that are going to equip and then support and encourage us, because we got to redeem the time, for the days are evil, right? And that gets, again, to align with people who share your values, because together you're harder to beat than when you're just that one homeschool mom walking through the drugstore without a mask and you get accosted by the creepy guy. We saw those videos how many times, right? What do you think?
So the atheist church lady, James Lindsay, who I think deservedly gets panned quite often from circles like this, This is one area, actually, that he is right on the money with, is this conversation that we just had. And I want to give our audience a tip on the dope rhyme. I'm not sure if you've seen these videos. Lefties will go around with their cameras at certain events, try to trip up conservative or not woke or non-left speakers with one question. And that question is, what is wokeness? Define wokeness. And I've seen a lot of actually right-wingers, they've gotten tripped up on that question. Here's what I would submit as an answer to that question. If you've got a left-wing coworker, if you've got a left-wing family member who tries to pin you down on this question, what is wokeness? Say this. Wokeness is cultural Marxism. Wokeness is cultural Marxism. What is cultural Marxism? It's the old Marxism warmed over. What is the old Marxism? Marxism is seizing the means of production economically and reducing each and every individual down to an economic widget. What is cultural Marxism? Cultural Marxism is seizing the means of production culturally and reducing each individual down to what's between their legs or the color of their skin. That is wokeness. We end up in the same place where we're just economic widgets in the long run, but that is wokeness. That's a tip on the dope rhyme if any of your lefty friends or family members try to trip you up. But essentially what she's talking about there at the very end, talking about educating our people, talking about the churches in Northern Virginia and parishes in Northern Virginia being packed, she's saying we have to disciple. At least in theological terms, that's what she's talking about. And it's a perfect dovetail to what's missing from our previous conversation earlier in the hour.
Amen.
Again, amazing providential timing. I wish he was here for what just transpired during the top of our second hour here when we went over the Christian church, because that's a woman who's living in the D.C. area, and she's got a lot of optimism. We just had a very pessimistic half hour talking about much the same thing. She sees a healthy church that's ready to take
that's where her optimism comes from.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're in Iowa. Much redder.
What did it take for that to happen in Fairfax, Virginia, though?
Bad things.
Yeah. Suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems to be a correlation there. Back at it again tomorrow, noon to 2 Eastern, right after Glenn Beck, right here on Blaze TV. Until then, Romans 8:28.